Actually, those finals that I've covered in Texas, the one in Dallas, McMahon, it was like 100 and forever.
Yeah.
So hot. Hopefully we're not recording.
Is that code for you want me to have recorded that?
Welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. It's Thursday. We're in the middle of the conference finals. Everybody's tired. I know I'm tired. LeBron was debating whether he was tired last night.
He was tired.
Jackie, we'll talk about that in a second. Jackie Mack and I are in Boston. We went to the game last night in TD Garden. Spinning the dials in Los Angeles. And joining us, Andrew Hunter, are we allowed to say the finals? Are we allowed to say that you're joining us for the finals and we're doing live podcasts during the finals after games and stuff?
We're not allowed to say that. Thanks for saying that.
You're welcome.
That's great.
And joining us from Houston, I think that's where the series is, is Van McMahon.
Howdy, partners.
So, Jackie, that Cavs locker, Jackie and I were in the Cavs locker room after the game last night. How would you describe the mood, the atmosphere in that locker room after that game?
I would say it was disjointed, much like the Cavs were throughout the game. How's that for a depiction? It was bizarre, right? Wouldn't you say?
It was dead quiet.
Except for LeBron. Right?
Well, that's true. LeBron was chatting everybody up.
He was doing that false, hey, everything's fine and I'm fine. I'm not tired. I'll talk to anybody thing that people do. Very odd, very quiet. I want you to know, I did go over to Kyle Korver and I gave him a big hug and told him I thought he was very brave for doing that story and that the trust he had with you, Brian, to do that story, which removed both Steven Jackson and myself to tears on the live set of The Jump. That's how powerful that story was. But so he was in the back. I was sitting, you saw me, with Kevin, who had like two ankles in an ice bucket and something funky with that thumb, huh? That thumb does not look good, Brian.
Yeah, that thumb is when going, you know, he did it in the first, I think the second game of the playoffs.
Yeah, it doesn't look good.
And, he tore a ligament in there.
Right.
I don't think wasn't completely torn. If it was completely torn, he wouldn't have been able to play, but he has been dealing with that.
So weird, very weird vibe in that locker room. But is there any doubt? Is there any doubt? We all know what's going to happen. They're going to go back Friday and win. And then here we are all over again on Sunday.
I suppose that's possible. I thought the game, Jackie, I thought both teams played poorly.
Very poorly.
Relatively. And I thought the Celtics just got more out of it. They got second chance points. They hit a couple more threes. They got to the line. They shot 36% and won a game going away.
Astonishing. Astonishing.
Major missed opportunity for the Cavs, because obviously for them to win the series, they have to win a game here. And they didn't, you know, if you're going to beat the Celtics, you beat them on a night when they're not at their best, and they were not at their best. The Cavs, after, you know, LeBron had more points than the rest of the starting lineup combined, and it was a low-energy game for LeBron.
It was, very much so. And, you know, the other thing is, you talk about wasted opportunities. They got a lot out of Larry Nance Jr. They got something out of Jordan Clarkson on the road, and that was unexpected. And they didn't capitalize on it.
Well, they got nothing out of J.R. Smith. And next, although Ty Lue defends him for his defense, and you know, Jaylen Brown and he was guarding Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum. Tatum for a guy who's 19 years old, had an incredibly strong professional performance because nobody was doing well, but Tatum just totally maximized what he had at his disposal.
You couldn't be any more right on that.
And even Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown was like 4-15. Mm-hmm. So he had a quote-unquote bad game, but he got to the line. And he made plays. I
mean, that's it. Both Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown did what they didn't do in Cleveland, and that is created opportunities where you get to the line, where you drive and you try to break down that defense. I mean, you know, it's funny. I think, what did Terry Rozier end up being? 3-15, maybe?
Yeah, and two of those, horrific. I think, were two of the baskets, I think.
Garbage time. Baskets. So, like, his 3-15 was horrific.
That's
right. Jaylen Brown's was kind of like, oh, wow, did he shoot that badly? Because he seemed like he was in the mix.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So, I mean, on one hand, Jackie, I think the Cavs have actually played, for them, admirable defense for the last four games. The last four games, the Celtics are shooting about 40% as a team, and that is just unheard of. They've held the Celtics under 100 points, I think, three games in a row. And if you'd told me that at the beginning of the season, I said this series will be over in five, because I just thought, well, the Cavs can't defend anybody, but the one thing they can do is score. They score with the best of them,
right? And but the flip side of that, Brian, is the Celtics' identity has been, will always be, on the defensive end. So,
and it has been this series. And but the thing about it is, they're just, when they get nothing out of the supporting cast, you know, yes, it's a combination because the Celtics are doing a good job, but you know, and also Ty Lue last night, inexplicably. I mean, Kyle Korver.
Oh yes, Brian, can you explain that comment post game where Ty Lue said that Kyle Korver didn't play the first quarter because Ogilvy didn't go into the game? That seemed like a weird reason, didn't it?
I can't believe Ty said that. True. He shouldn't have said it.
Well, it makes no sense.
So Kyle Korver is shooting about, I don't have the number directly in front of me. He shot 52% from three-point range in the Raptor series, and he was shooting 47% from three-point range in this series. So he's obviously a pretty valuable weapon. Now, granted, the Celtics have set their defense up to try to stop him, but the guy's been a pretty valuable offensive weapon. He didn't get off the bench in the first quarter, and he only played 7 minutes in the first half.
Right.
And this is a guy who's been averaging like 23 minutes, and a lot of people thought he'd be playing more. And the Cavs couldn't score. They had like 36 points or whatever. I think they had 42 points at halftime, and they couldn't score. And here's like one of their most effective weapons not playing. And so naturally, Ty Lue was asked about it after the game, and they said, well, the Celtics changed their rotation and didn't play Semi Ojeleye, and so that was Korver's matchup. And it was such a terrible answer.
And, you know, up to this point, I thought Ty Lue has acquitted himself so well and really been underrated in this series for a lot of the things he's done, truly. I really feel that way.
Yeah, well, I do. You know, he made a couple of defensive adjustments that have helped, but that was such a poor answer. I mean, even if that was true, which I'm just, you know, there are matchups that you're going to play to in this series, but you deploy Kyle Korver and let the Celtics react to that, not the other way around.
Of course.
So that, considering all things considered, that was a rough answer, especially. And Korver hit a couple of threes. Like he didn't have a good game, but he if he had gotten more time, in theory, he would have made some more shots. So
I can tell you, Brian, in the Celtics locker room, they were very happy that Kyle Korver didn't play more.
Of course they were.
The rotation seemed a little jumbled. Kyle didn't play in the first quarter, and Kevin and LeBron were on the bench to start the fourth. Did something get out of whack for you, or is that the way you wanted it to go?
Well, initially he's been putting Olajay in, so that's been kind of Kyle's matchup when he comes in the game. But he didn't play him tonight, so, you know, kind of, you know, threw us for a loop.
I mean, I feel bad for poor Semi Ojeleye. He'll never play another second this year. they told him, don't even get on the plane. Get on the plane.
That's funny.
Yeah. So just, you know, the Celt, you know, a couple of players in the Cavs locker room were saying they'd never seen a series where there was such a stark difference between teams play at home and road.
Right.
And it certainly ranks as high as I can remember. Not just in the home team winning, and we see that, but in terms of the Cavs have been absolutely abysmal in Boston, and the Celtics were absolutely abysmal in Cleveland. It hasn't been that enjoyable of a series. For a series that's close, and we'll switch over to Houston here in a minute, but I don't know.
It's funny how it unfolds, because it's almost formulaic. Like, the first thing I did when I'm looking, and I looked at the box score, I'm like, okay, did they shoot 25% from three-point land again, Cleveland, here in Boston? Yes, they did. And did the Celtics spread out their scoring back here at home? Yes, they did. All the things you need, you know, did Al Horford, now Al Horford didn't have a fabulous game, but he got back to being
all things considered, he had a good game. Yeah, I think he had 15 and 12. Yeah.
Right. And that's who Al is, because so many of the things Al does, and we talk about this all the time, are the intangibles, especially on the defensive end. And, you know, I thought one of the great adjustments that the Celtics made that the Cavs did not capitalize on, Brian, and I expect them to do in the next game, is, so they clearly made a decision. First of all, they put Baines in the lineup. So, you know, that takes away the whole Tristan Thompson thing, the first thing. But the second thing is, on that switch that they were doing where LeBron ends up on Terry Rozier, which was clearly a problem, what they decided to do now in this game was Terry would show, Rozier would show, or hedge, whichever word you like better, and then go back and then scamper back to his man. Now, that was a good strategy to stop LeBron and to prevent that matchup, which is clearly favorably LeBron, from happening. But the way you exploit that is you make the extra pass, and you get the Celtics in that scramble. Like, what did they used to call it in Miami? The mixer, right? Where you have to rotate.
And they didn't do that. Yeah, so the other thing that was happening, the Celtics were doing, and I don't follow them close enough in the regular season to know where this was normal. So the Cavs were running a lot of, I'm not an X's and O's person, but the Cavs were running a lot of 1-3 pick and rolls. So George Hill would come down. That's what the matchup they wanted. They would have George Hill and LeBron in a pick and roll so that they would try to force a switch onto Rozier. So at the times where Rozier did switch and the Cavs got, quote unquote, what they wanted, Aaron Baines would run out and swap with Terry Rozier. And Rozier would go cover Tristan Thompson.
That's right.
So LeBron ended up on Baines. Now, LeBron beat Baines a couple of times, but
it's not the same matchup. Not the same matchup as Rozier. You can't overpower Baines.
For sure. It's the definition of thing you can't. One thing you can't do to Baines is overpower him. So the thing about it was, as you said, Jackie, LeBron didn't attack this. LeBron sort of just let Baines come. And in the last, LeBron only had 3 assists in game 4 and only had 5 last night. And he wasn't as aggressive in attacking. Like, you normally, you know, in that situation, if they're doing that, take advantage of their ridiculous double switching there and attack. But LeBron just waited.
He was gassed. Brian, I don't care what he says. He was gassed.
I agree.
And you know, you look for all the telltale signs, holding the shorts, leaning over. As you know, I had a little trouble with my neck last night, flared up a little bit. So I ended up in this tiny little room on a couch.
Yeah, I didn't want to tell your story, Jackie, but
that's okay.
If you tell the story.
I was in a tiny little room on a couch because I couldn't sit up straight again. Lucky me. And so I was lying there flat. And so I had the benefit of seeing the television broadcast. And they kept showing LeBron, and he looked so tired. And I've never seen him look like that, because we've got him like he's Superman right now. He's nothing can ever affect him. He's impervious to everything. And I was sitting with Tommy Heinsohn. It was just surreal what happened to me last night. And Tommy Heinsohn was sitting eating fruit, and I was lying prone on this couch trying to stop the nerve pain in my neck. And Tommy Heinsohn turned to me and he said, "He's finally out of gas." It was just beautiful.
I mean, and it manifest, you know, on TV they were showing him sort of being lethargic and stuff, but it manifests itself in the meaningful ways, like it was not attacking those switches, because by waiting and not going into full attack mode and forcing help and then kicking the ball, that's playing into the Celtics' hands. So
yeah,
you know, LeBron's numbers were pretty. He was 11 of 22. He had 10 rebounds and 5 assists. The assists were way down, but that's a pretty damn good game.
Oh, of course it is. Yeah.
But
you know what else too? The reason they won the last game, well, many reasons, but one of them was not only did he impose his will offensively, defensively, I think I saw the number that opponents were scoring 0.36 points per possession against him. I mean, that's ridiculously, unbelievably fantastic if you're LeBron James. And he did not have the same presence on the defensive end either. And you know what? I think it took a lot out of him to have what he did in game 4, He had to do everything, both ends. It wears on you. I don't care who you are.
Right, and we're now at the stage where it's every other day. They didn't. You know, they got the 3-day break. In game three, he had great energy, but that was after a 3-day break. So, two bottom lines when it comes to the Cavs. One, they miss Kyrie Irving. I know it's a repetitive drum, but
so do the Celtics, by the way.
Not as much. Not as much. If they had Kyrie last night, they'd have won that game. I know that sounds stupid, but it's easy to lose sight of the big picture in reality. The other thing is that they are so reliant on the 3-pointer.
Yes, they are.
And the Celtics have done a great job in this series of holding them down. They've only had one good 3-point shooting game, and they squeezed out game four without good 3-point shooting because LeBron scored 44 points and he was just great. Mm-hmm. And they needed, if LeBron scored 44 last night, the Cavs would have probably won that game. But he just, you know, at some point you just can't do it. And that's where he's at.
If Cleveland somehow wins the series and wins the finals as an objective third party viewer, would you say that this is the greatest switch flipping team of all time? Like eclipsing those 0-2 Lakers?
Yeah,
these are pretty big ifs, Andrew.
I mean, why not? Because we may only have one more game to even entertain this conversation.
Honestly, I felt like last year was a better switch flipping for Cleveland, even though they didn't win, just because they're so bad going to the playoffs and they cruise to the East and lose only one game this year. I mean, this has been a grind for them.
I mean, this is the thing I can't figure out with this team, though. Like, they destroy the number one seed in the East in the second round, but in the first and third, it's just, what is going on?
Well, that's because the number one seed in the East had a huge, huge, huge mental block when it came to LeBron. I mean, they melted down at the end of game one, and that was that.
Well, let's forget about the potential finals. If LeBron gets this Cavs team two more wins, it's a top, I almost want to say it's a top three accomplishment, but he has three titles, so I'll say top four accomplishment in his career, because this team is not a championship team.
It's what about that? I mean, he's taken a worse team to the finals. The first team he took to the finals
I'm going to dispute that.
Dude, really? That first team was terrible.
Okay. That team, first off, we were in a completely different era at that time. Games were routinely won in the 70s. Okay? That team was a phenomenal defensive team. And back then, like, remember, we were in the era where Allen Iverson won the MVP with four defenders and himself. I know that... That team was not a historically good team, but I will object to anybody who says that that team was crap. That team had a lot of redeeming qualities, and it was built for the style of the day, which was when you have to beat the Detroit Pistons, you have to get into hand-to-hand combat and fight in the trenches and win 79-74. And that's what that team did. And so I look at this team and I see a whole bunch of guys who contribute nothing. People like to make fun of Sasha Pavlovich and Eric Snow and all that stuff. Well, Eric Snow defended like a demon, just like he did for Allen Iverson when he helped that team get to the finals. Yeah, they were overmatched in those finals too, but, you know, they didn't get there by accident. Sasha Pavlovich, you know, defended. Ira Neubel defended. Drew Gooden actually had some really good games. I'll tell you what. LeBron, you know, Drew Gooden's long retired, but LeBron could have used Drew Gooden, 2007 Drew Gooden last night. Drew Gooden made baskets.
Drew Gooden was a blast. He was a blast. I love Drew Gooden.
So do I. But anyway, that's enough about the East. McMahon.
Hello. No one is available to take your call. Please leave a message after the tone.
Andrew, let's talk about something that's very important in life. Do you know what that is?
Is it love?
That's important. I agree.
Is it money?
also important. This is in the top 10 with it.
Okay.
It's peace of mind.
Oh, okay.
Peace of mind. When I was a kid and I heard people talk about that, I thought it was P-I-E-C-E.
And oh, like a piece, a piece. Or a piece of
yes,
candy.
Yeah. Yes, of your mind. No, peace of mind. Peace of mind is very valuable. You know, the older I get, the more I realize, especially in this time where people struggle with anxiety, seems like more than when I was younger, peace of mind is very, it's got a lot of value. And that is where one of our new sponsors to the Hoop Collective Pod comes in, because it's SimpliSafe, who protects more than 2 million Americans' homes with home security systems, and gives you what, Andrew?
Peace of mind.
Right. Yeah. Thank you. Good job. Good job. Peace of mind. So that you know that your home is protected whether you're in it or not. And, you know, you live in a big city, Andrew, Los Angeles. There's a lot of stuff going on. Yeah. How's your peace of mind when you leave your home?
It is not good because I have a lot of worthless stuff, but it's my stuff.
Right. That's right. This will not just, it's not just a cheap gadget. It protects your windows, your doors, and your entire home, obviously 24 hours a day, and they monitor it. Andrew, you can learn all about it, including the fact that you can pay just $15 a month with no contracts. You can learn more about SimpliSafe and how they can protect your home. Just go to simplisafe.com/hoop. That's simplisafe.com/hoop. Not my best, but what am I going to do?
Yeah. There's, I don't know why. I just thought you had like a robbery story sitting in your back pocket.
I wish I did. I don't wish I did, but it would have been good for this moment. I should have started with the West because it's so much more compelling. McMahon, now all of a sudden the Warriors are a little banged up. Mm-hmm. And I watched our good friend Tom Haberstroh's big number this morning. And Haberstroh was talking about how the Rockets defense, the switching defense, has forced the Warriors into just ISO ball. And they've had way more ISO possessions than they've ever had before. And it slowed the game down and made them less effective. What are we seeing here right now? What's the temperature?
I mean, I was absolutely shocked to see the way, not that the Rockets were able to win on the road, but the way that they won. To hold the Warriors to 12 points in the fourth quarter, 3 of 18 shooting, and I think the Rockets' defense was obviously great down the stretch, but the Warriors clearly ran out of gas. And for Steph Curry to go from shimmying to can't buy a bucket in the fourth quarter, that was pretty shocking. And now you've got, obviously, you still got Iguodala, and we'll see. You know, shoot around is here in a little while. He's a iffy. It sounds like Clay's going to play, but Clay was awful when he came back after going to the locker room with the knee injury. He was totally out of sync. I mean, he looked as bad as the drunk fake Clay that I was able to witness and escort out.
That was an all-time photo.
That was a quality tweet. this is going to be very, very interesting. And, you know, and it's funny because you talk about fatigue for the Warriors. The Rockets only played seven guys. You know, Luke Mbamute is unplayable at this point because he's so out of rhythm. Anderson's not playing. Nene's not playing. So, I mean, as much as the Iguodala injury hurts the Warriors, it's not like the Rockets are beating them with numbers.
Jackie, what's the old saying in the playoffs? You play eight and trust seven.
It's so true. It's funny how every single coach, with the exception of Ty Lue, because we never know what he's going to do from one game to the next, but all the coaches have shortened their rotation. Look at the Celtics. They're playing seven now. They're down to seven.
Yeah, you're right.
That's what happens. You know, it's interesting. Tim, I was watching that game the other night, and I'm watching the Warriors down the stretch, and I'm like, they look like the panicked Rockets of last season, didn't they?
Yeah.
The stat for me from that game was zero assists in the final 10.5 minutes of the game. Golden State, zero assists. The team that is made a business out of sharing the ball.
Right. And like Wendy said, I mean, the Rockets have kind of forced them to become this ISO heavy team. And that's, I mean, the whole design of the Rockets defense, switch everything. When you switch everything, you end up forcing teams to go one-on-one. And Mike D'Antoni's deal is, look, we're going to play ISO ball. We feel like we've got the best ISO player in the world. And then Chris Paul being on a very short list. And his deal is, if we go ISO versus ISO, I don't care who we're playing. You know, we'll take our chances with that. And, you know, so far. It's crazy to see those two teams play a game in the 90s. With all that offensive firepower. And, you know, the Rockets went over 5 minutes to start the game without getting a basket. And then Harden carried them for a little while. Then Chris Paul got rolling. I compared it. It was like a heavyweight fight where guys had just been throwing haymakers the whole time. And the fourth quarter, I mean, it was just like they were kind of leaning up against each other. They had nothing left.
You know, I feel my age in the NBA all the time now. And, you know, when I first started.
Stop it. I don't even want to have this conversation with you. Just stop right there. Stop.
Well, when I first started covering the league, you only switched pick and rolls like in desperation situations at the end of the games.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
it's
you know.
Pick and roll league now. It's all
right.
It is a pick
and now
league.
Everybody plays roughly same size players. So it becomes. But to me, the thing that was so impressive about Houston, and I almost feel like it should be studied by teams going into the future, is that the Warriors got so hot at that in the end of the third quarter, and Steph is throwing in everything. Durant's got guys leaning all over him. He's throwing in shots. The crowd is just going crazy. They're all wearing yellow.
Didn't help them.
Yeah, by the way, the Cavs fans wore yellow in games 3 and 4. The fans are going crazy. You know, Houston's got to call timeouts. I mean, it's curtains, right? It's curtains.
It was shimmying, and they're up double figures. Like
he's throwing at everything.
But so let me ask you this question, because I've been thinking about this. I know they all played heavy minutes because we've already discussed the fact that the rotations are nubbed down to seven, maybe eight occasionally. If you're Steve Kerr and you know if you go up 3-1 in that game, the series is over, do you take Steph out?
Yeah. You know, Steve is still living with some of the lineup decisions he made in the 2016 Finals Game 7.
I know that. But I really, and this isn't hindsight on my part. When he took him out, I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah,
I would have done that.
And he was just unbelievable.
He was unconscious, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And he had, look. I am so engrossed in this world that I'm in right now. I can't educatedly talk about the Warriors rotations, but I was surprised to see Kevon Looney out there in the fourth quarter, as the fifth man. And, I know that Nick Young has not gotten it done.
Well, Looney's actually been good in the series.
Well, and he wasn't helping him in that fourth quarter.
Yeah, he wasn't. He wasn't good in the fourth. He looked panicked. He looked like what he was, a young player who was a little panicked.
Exactly.
Yep.
So I step back.
That's where Iguodala being hurt. Like, I mean, do you trust Nick Young in those situations?
Well, he clearly didn't.
And I know their roster is so weird. Their roster, they've got like 1,000 big guys,
but they don't want to play any of them. If I'm not mistaken, and I could be mistaken, I don't think Capella was in the game.
No, yeah, Capella didn't play that much.
He didn't play that well either.
They were able to kind of play him off the floor.
So here's my question.
Here's another question. I get that there are too many bigs and you don't want to go too big, but see, at some point, don't you just trust David West, who's been around forever, and it's just one of those gutsy, Marcus Smart, make things happen kind of guys. Don't you just trust him for 2 or 3 minutes?
Or Sean Livingston, who
he had a bad game. He was struggling. And, you know, I think the minutes thing for him, Brian, I think is a deal. I don't know if you agree, Tim, based on his life history and, you know, they've been careful his entire career to keep his minutes around 19 minutes, I think, 19, 20 minutes. I think that's something.
Good point.
The thing I thought was shocking was when Kerr said after the game that he didn't put Curry back in because Semi Ojeleye didn't check back in.
Yes, I know. He thought Semi Ojeleye. Oh my God.
Semi, that's just the greatest thing ever.
There were people in the American Athletic Conference, I think that's where SMU plays, who didn't match up with Semi Ojeleye the way Ty Lue did.
I mean, that was unbelievable.
So funny. So Tim, what do we, stick your finger in the air here. What do you think now?
Man, I don't know. Like, how hard is this series to predict? Because we finally got a close game, but before that, it's like blowout, but they're like alternating blowouts. I don't know. It's going to be fascinating.
This is like the most important home game for the Rockets since the 90s, right?
Yeah, since the Clutch City days.
So what sort of atmosphere are we expecting in Houston?
You know
tonight?
What? Honestly, it's going to be unbelievably emotional. Because they're going to have the Santa Fe High School senior class is going to be there.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
They're going to have the Santa Fe High School choir sing the national anthem.
Wow.
They're doing they're going to have like an encore tribute pregame. They're playing a video pregame. So like it's going to be it's going to be an unbelievably emotional atmosphere. And I don't know what kind of impact that has on the game, but it's definitely going to be something that is unique and like, far from your normal playoff atmosphere. That goes way beyond just a game five of a Western Conference Finals type of deal.
I've covered so many of these, and last night was not a classic one, but I've covered so many of these game fives over the years where it's 2-2. And these game fives a lot of times end up defining the series. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes it ends up being, the game seven, game six, something crazy happens. But there's just everybody feels the importance, although I didn't think the Cavs played with the urgency yesterday. But these are huge, huge moments when it's 2-2. Everything the Celtics, everything the Rockets have done the last year comes down to this.
But don't you think that the Rockets win they just had the other night, to me, was the biggest win in their franchise since Hakeem and the boys? I do. I thought that was a huge win.
I can't compliment their composure. Exactly. After that third quarter run, enough.
Yeah, the only one you could even put up there would be the crazy comeback against the Clippers.
Right, right. This just felt like it, and part of it I think too is just because it was so much of it had to do with Chris Paul, right? And that was the whole reason he came here. And man, did he to coin your phrase, Tim? He showed cojones up and down.
Yeah, and after like the first quarter, like, okay, is Chris Paul going to make any kind of impact in this series?
Right.
I mean, he didn't. He no points for the second straight first quarter. Didn't get an assist to the last the last split second of the quarter, and then, I mean, it was like 3.5 minutes left in the half. He hits a really tough fadeaway corner three-pointer over Durant, and then boom, he gets rolling. And then, in the fourth quarter, he got some buckets there early when they make that run to get back in. They're down 12 in the fourth quarter, And then, you know, he was also just a huge part of what they're doing defensively there.
Yeah. Also just stabilizing the team. They actually ran some sound from D'Antoni in the huddles where he was like, all right, they're hot. Cool. That's all right. You know, and I know that that sounds pretty basic. You're like, oh, thank you very much, genius. But there, I think there's something to be said for a coach's demeanor coming into a huddle in that situation saying,
right.
You know, I remember Stan Van Gundy. I always remember this, the 2009 conference finals. You know, the Cavs were 8-0 in the playoffs, and the Celtics or the Magic had just beat the Celtics in seven games, and the Cavs got up by like 25 points. And there was all these huddles where they played the sound. And Stan was like, hey, look at the scoreboard, guys. We're down 17. Guys, look at the scoreboard. We're down 12. Hey, we're down 7. And, like, you know, he was just very – for all the people who think he's sort of Mr. Grump, like he was very encouraging and, like, sort of easing that team back. And I always remember that, you know, just sort of not giving up. And I thought that, you know, in a situation where nobody would have been surprised if the Rockets just folded up, I was expecting it.
And didn't you see little evidence of it with Harden too? You know, driving. There was that one play down the right side where he drove and he lost the ball. He's looking for a foul. He's walking back. I'm like, here we go. And Chris Paul is like, nope, not happening. Not happening. I just thought it was just a really incredible performance by Chris Paul.
Well, I am just really looking forward to this game tonight. This is it. This is what the Rockets have been building towards. This is the design of their team. The Harden trade to the Chris Paul trade to everything, it builds up to this game. I mean, this is their opportunity. I don't think if they fall down 3-2 going back, I don't think they can. I think it's a real tough ask to ask them to win again out there. So this is it. And I mean, I feel the gravity of the moment. And, you know, Chris Paul, you know, he doesn't know how many opportunities he's going to get here. And, right. and the Warriors, who I still think are just so incredibly just, they're such a mountain to climb, but, you know, because of the injuries, when they got one leg of the table, it's a little wobbly.
Well, also I think you had to look at the end of that game and say, they lost their composure. They panicked. They took rush shots. They took bad shots.
Oh, my God. You're right, Jackie. Durant, they threw up some terrible shots.
I was like, Durant, what are you doing? Like, take the dude in the post and score over him, which you can do, it seems to me, at almost any time. And even Steph, you know, bad shots. And you just don't expect them to panic. And I thought there was a little bit of panic. You know what it was to me? It was almost like, and this happens so often with Golden State, it's always been their bugaboo, right? It's like their urgency. They're like, oh, wait, we might lose this game. It was way too late when they realized it. Way too late.
Right. Well, when Steph shimmying, I mean, that's like, okay, this is over. You know, let the celebration begin. And he shimmied, and then they fell apart after that.
That's what I give the Rockets credit for. That's why the Warriors, you know, they had knocked the guy out. Was the Undertaker, you know, that the Undertaker's laying flat on his back and he just gets up? The Warriors would walked away thinking that they dropped them. Like, all right, it's over. You know, it's like in the movie where you think you've killed the villain and he comes flying back up at you. They made the mistake of not finishing them. And
you know what? I think they did that. I think they did that after game one. And then they did it again, like you said, in the fourth quarter of game four. I don't know that and maybe it's changed now, but I don't know that the Warriors really respected the Rockets going into this series.
That's a fair comment. I mean, who do the Warriors respect?
Nobody.
I think they may respect LeBron James, but they don't probably respect his team. But like,
I bet they've changed their minds.
Well, we're gonna see. We're gonna see.
But, you know, it's like Draymond. They know, you know, we give ourselves one of those kind of don't show up games per series.
Well, they already had that game.
Yeah,
they sure did.
He said that after game two. And it's just like, wow.
He's been great, though. Hasn't he been great?
Yeah.
I know he hasn't shot the ball great.
Well, but he ran out of gas. He ran out of gas.
I saw that with the missed dunk, but I can't take my eyes off the guy. The amount of ground he covers to get rebounds, to defend, like even the dunk, you know, where Harden posterized him, that was an incredible dunk and all that. But look where he came from to try to stop him. Most guys would have just said, forget it, you know.
Thank you, Jackie. This is what I'm talking about. We shouldn't, you know, belittle people who try to play defense by saying, oh, they got dunked on. No, they tried to defend and it didn't work.
That's
kudos
right.
to you.
Yep, exactly.
I know people say I don't let anybody have fun, but I just I mean, sorry, here I go. I should stop myself, but sorry, I would rather have my defender coming up on the guy and trying to stop him and get crossed over than standing 8 feet back and letting him, you know, not get embarrassed but not defend.
Hey, that's why we love Man Bun here in Boston.
I'm telling you.
I don't care how many times you dunk on him. He had a good game last night too, by the way.
Hello. No one is available to take your call. Please leave a message after the tone.
Andrew, we have this new product that we have. We're sponsoring the podcast. And before I tell you what it is, I'm just going to tell you about their website.
Okay.
Because I think it sort of speaks for itself. You go to their website, which I will tell you in a minute.
Okay.
And this is what it says. It says, against staggering odds, two things happened. One, the universe. Two, you. Let's walk at our full height. Honor our forebears. Have a smile. And for God's sake, floss. And then it has two links. One to shop hair and one to shop sex.
Well, I'm...
Now, which should I click on?
There's one I want you to click on. And then there's one I need you to click on.
Okay. Well, you and I both are very fortunate in the fact that we have very good hair.
Mine is a toupee.
I don't believe that to be true. You have very strong hair.
Regrettably.
I have good hair. I have good hair. I have other things that are very bad about me, but my hair is positive. So I'm not going to shop hair. I'm going to shop sex.
Oh, okay. I needed you to shop hair, but I guess we can shop sex.
Oh, okay.
Well, because I can't grow any facial hair, so anytime someone says something about hair, I'm interested.
Me either. You sometimes have facial hair.
It's very sad. It's sad
but
facial hair.
It's better than what I can do. I couldn't grow it for anything. It's terrible. This is the empowerment that this product offers. This is what they say on their website. And remember, if you look good, you'll feel good. If you feel good, you'll play good. If you play good, they'll pay good. If they pay good, you'll live good. If you live good, you'll die good.
Okay, I like all of that up until the die good part. I don't want anyone to dictate to me when I die. I don't care if it's good. I don't care if it's bad. I don't care whatever it is.
There's no such thing as good dying. I don't think.
Yeah, just stop with the live good, and I'm good enough for me.
Well, this product is on forhims.com. forhims.com, which is a one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, and sexual wellness for men. Andrew, which of these things going to help you with?
I feel well sexually.
Good.
And you have already said that I don't need hair issues.
I don't think you do.
So I think I could use better skin. Better skin would be good for me.
I think all of us could use better skin, but other people may have
other
sexual
issues.
Wellness issues that they can go to there or
hair loss issues. I think so. Like, I think that comment that you read off the site where, what is, if you look good, then you'll feel good. Like, I think that's a tangible thing that if you have confidence, then that projects itself to the people around you and they pick up on that. And if looking good helps you give confidence, then that's that.
Well, 4Hims is they do this stuff, and they do it with medical grade solutions. That's a pretty good credo to live by, which is you know, If you look good, you feel good. If you feel good, you'll play good. If you play good, they'll pay good. If you pay good, you live good. And if you live good, you die good. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
And this is one of these things where you will tell them what you need, whether it be skincare for hair loss,
hair care,
or for sex
loss,
or sex loss, sexual wellness is the correct way to say it, sir. You will fill out some information. You will be put in touch with a doctor, and you will get a prescription. And then they will ship the products right to you, Andrew.
Okay.
So our listeners get a free trial month of 4HIMS for just $5. The website, you should just check it out because there's some funny stuff on there and some interesting stuff. It'll make you laugh. It'll make you think, Andrew Hahn. And this would cost a lot more money if you went to a doctor or just to a pharmacy. So go to 4HIMS.com/collective. FORHIMS.com/collective. 4HIMS/collective to check out what they can do for you.
So, Brian, I was thinking about you the other day. I don't even know why. When I saw Steph Curry's daughter, and I was remembering your little rant about her before you had children. And I remember thinking in my head, wait till Brian has children. He'll understand. Do you feel differently now? Is
no.
My question.
No.
Your child isn't old enough yet. That's
fine. I've gone. So the thing is, I just, you know, access has been cut so much.
It has. That's true.
And not only that, but now players routinely go up with two people at the podium. So your questions are naturally in half. And if you don't ask, like LeBron James has a 40-point game and he goes up the podium with Kevin Love. And then when you would like to ask LeBron three questions in a row, he's like, why don't you ask Kevin any questions? I say, well, yeah. How about Kevin come up here by himself? So my thing is, after the championship, or, you know, you win the East or West and you win the championship, sure. But you lose a game and you bring your, and which was happening that particular postseason, there were players who were losing games who were bringing their kids up to the podium and using their kids sort of as shields. And so, no, I didn't think it was cool. Sorry.
It'll cross the line when players lose games and come up with just random kids. Just they'll just pluck any kid out.
Actually,
of
right. When they come up with Brian's kid.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you'll notice, it's not happening really anymore. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was on the. I feel confident about being on the right side of history. Again, after the championship, you win the championship, you can do whatever you want.
I just couldn't resist. I just couldn't resist.
I know.
Well, God, you're a grumpy old fart.
I'm sorry. Somebody's got to defend. You know, somebody's got to speak
up. The sanctity
up.
Of the podium.
Well, look, really fun. What happens is during the entire regular season, for 6 months, we interview the players in the locker room. And when the player comes out of the locker room, is family time. That is because their work day is over. They've punched the clock. Their family is waiting for them. And especially if it's a really big game, they're happy to see them. So what happens in the postseason is they come out of the locker room. It's punch the clock time. It's time for the family to come see him, and you have to go to the podium because just the nature of the demands of that's really what happened is that when the player comes out of the locker room, especially their kids, they want to see dad. So I totally get it. I totally get it. I just at the end of the day, I'd like to be able to ask the player. And here's the thing: I never ask questions in press conferences anymore.
Of course, you don't.
Because
yeah, nobody does.
I've long decided that you're not going to get real answers there.
No, you so just wait till they get off the podium and you walk back with them to the locker room.
Or you talk with them before.
Yeah.
You know, I've sort of evolved just thinking, you know, do whatever up there now because it's not, you're not going to get, you know, occasionally you do get stuff. But like, just like the LeBron thing where he remembered every single play of the fourth quarter early in the series. You know, people were so excited. Oh my gosh, he's the smartest guy in the world. Isn't he great? He was being condescending to the media on that question. Because the Cavs blew a game, which they would really like to have back right now, blew a game in the fourth quarter where they were they didn't blow it. They were behind. But they, you know, LeBron came in the game and the team completely collapsed. And somebody asked a legitimate question. Marla Ridenour from the Akron Beacon Journal asked a legitimate question about what took place in that crucial moment of the game. And LeBron was condescending. He answered her literally and didn't answer the question. And everybody celebrated LeBron for the answer. But what LeBron was doing was, you know, being condescending. So, I'm not going to sit back here and just pretend like I don't know what's going on. So, but I know when I say it, I'm the bad guy. I'm the grump. I'm the jerk. But and LeBron's very giving of his time to the media. I'm fine with it. I mean, he's very giving of his time to the media. But
yeah, he was pretty good.
He was being condescending with that answer.
Oscar the Grouch type of demeanor.
Well,
but we know better. We know better. We do.
Before everyone heads out, it's the morning of Game 5 in Houston. Tim, is the winner of this game going to win the series between Golden State and Houston?
There's an 83% chance of that based on history. No, I'll say this. Either the Warriors win the series in 6, the Rockets win in 7.
Oh.
The Warriors win in 6 or the Rockets win in 7. Okay. Yep.
I'm sticking to that.
That's a reasonable thing to say.
That is. Well, don't you feel the same way about I do? Either the Celtics or the Cavs win in 7.
yeah, only because, well,
because the Celtics can't play on the road.
I guess, but
you keep expecting them to, right?
My thing is, I think the Cavs actually have discovered something how to slow the Celtics down these last three, four games. But part of me thinks that window is going to close, that they let the opportunity pass because they had a great opportunity in game 2 when they were up by 8 at the half,
right.
And they had a terrible second half. And then last night, so part of me says, Jackie, though, that maybe the Cavs should have already won this series.
I just think you're going to get obviously the Celtics have been great at home, blah, blah, blah. I think you're going to get a superhuman LeBron game 7 performance.
Yeah, but I've seen that before and not get it done when he's not.
Well, you saw it in game 2. Yeah. But
When I was in the locker room last night, I talked to a couple Cavs players and said to them, he looks really tired. I wasn't interviewing them, I was just talking to them.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, he does. I said, well, but I guess for game 6, he'll be better. And then one of the guys looked at me and goes, yeah, but does that mean he comes back in game 7 and he's tired again?
Yeah. People were saying last night, well, LeBron will be great. I mean, LeBron has won 5 consecutive game 7s, which is, that's pretty damn good.
That's what great players do, yeah.
And, you know, he did win game 7 2016 on the road, which is pretty damn good. But at some point, the string is up. And I'd say that same thing about the Cavs this season and even in this series. At some point, the string is going to be up. And like I said, I think they've let the Celtics off the hook the last 2 games in Boston. They should have gotten one of those games. And
right.
maybe that's going to end up being what brings them down.
But you know what? You could almost say the same thing about the Celtics too, Brian. Like at some point, this fantasy bubble pops. You know, without all these great players and these young players, at some point, the enormity of the moment costs them a series. Now, whether that happens or not, I don't know. The one thing I'll say is this idea of the Celtics they don't have any stars. That is nonsense. They have 2 and they're evolving before your very eyes. So that narrative doesn't make sense anymore because Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are both going to be stars.
And I really think Al Horford is a great player to have in the postseason.
He is.
Oh, wow.
I just, you know, there was 4 teams
worth
offering
every penny,
max.
Right?
There was 4 teams offering a max contract.
Yeah, he's like the glue. He's like your ultimate glue guy.
I'd like to point out that last year, before Jaylen Brown was this and Jason Tatum was that, they got run out of this series 4-1. So, you know, it takes more than Al Horford, but he's, But when there's some other guys to lift him up, he's an incredible anchor to have, which is
he's so unselfish too. Doesn't care. Like that's why Irving, Hayward, Horford, if they all stay, which is an interesting question that we'll get to another day. Al's not going to care about sacrificing shots, minutes, any of that. He's just not.
It has to feel a little surreal to LeBron for LeBron to be in Cleveland and watch a Garnett, Pierce, Ray Allen, Rondo team just like be insurmountable. So he leaves Cleveland, and now there's all this swirling speculation about LeBron again. And he's looking across at the other team, and it's like a completely different Boston roster that again might.
Well, it was 10 years ago. I mean, one of the incredible, amazing things about this, the longevity of LeBron is that Donovan Mitchell was at the Boys and Girls Club in Greenwich, Connecticut,
mm-hmm. at the decision. Is that true? That's great. Yeah. That's a great little nugget.
He was at the club, but he wasn't in the little gym where they did it.
Oh, okay.
But he was a kid. Yeah. He was one of the boys.
Yeah, that's funny.
And now he's in the league dominating. And so that just tells you how long ago. And by the way, that was the last summer LeBron wasn't in the finals. Hmm. And he's been in the finals every year since. And so that just, you know, yeah, it's a different era, but that's because it's a compliment because he's been there for all those. He's dominating for all this era. So, but it's got to come to an end someday.
And yep, that, it always that, does. And it's never pretty. Now. It's never that's pretty. Right.
And this series hasn't been pretty. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I've got to move. And McMahon, thank you very much. I will be looking forward to your coverage tonight. Jackie, I'm coming back to Boston. Will it be for game 7? Will it be for game 3?
I don't know, man. Either way, hopefully I won't be on the couch. That's what I'm
all right. Well, I hope you feel better. Thank you, Andrew
Hahn. All right,
guys. Thanks for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast.
Bye-bye, guys.
Adios, amigos.